For this episode, I'm going to talk about something a little bit different, the dark. Okay, well, technically, I'm going to be talking about the lack of dark. You see, air pollution and water pollution, they get a lot of attention, but light pollution? I don't think people give it much thought. I mean, it's not real pollution, right? It's just an inconvenience and only a problem if you want to see the stars. But the truth is that light pollution has some very real impacts on plants, on insects, and on animals, including us humans. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, and this is the Dispatches from the Forest podcast. My 14-year-old has gotten really into astronomy in the last year or so, so she was super excited when her science teacher assigned a monthly sky guide as extra credit. The assignment was simple. Go outside on a clear night, look up, and identify various stars, planets, and constellations. Now, Cheyenne, Wyoming, the current location of Dispatches HQ, isn't a huge city. The population is about 65,000 people or so, and close to town or in town, it's possible to see quite a bit of the night sky. But one night, we drove about 10 miles outside of town, and we parked on a gravel road. And my daughter got out of the car, and she looked up, and she started jumping up and down and burst into tears with excitement because she could see the Milky Way. It was the first time she had ever really seen it with her own eyes. Now, maybe that's partially my failing as a parent, but it's also a side effect of light pollution. And even that far from town, the glow of the city was still prominent on the horizon and obscured most of the stars that were low in the sky in that direction. Light pollution currently encompasses about a quarter of the planet, which is nearly 50% more than just 25 years ago. Estimates are that with continued growth and urbanization, it's going to continue to increase by about 6% per year. But light pollution is not just a problem for 8th graders that are trying to count how many stars in the Pleiades cluster they can see with the naked eye. It impacts plants and animals in ways that we're just now starting to understand. Okay, let's start with plants. We all know that plants need light to grow. Using photosynthesis, they take sunlight and they convert it into carbohydrates. But did you know that plants sense light by way of photoreceptors, kind of like the photoreceptors we have in our eyes? Plants have 13 that we know of, 5 that absorb light in the near-infrared spectrum, which is reflected from the moon and emitted by stars, and 8 that absorb UV light, like from the sun. So basically, in the absence of artificial lighting, plants know the difference between day and night. And that's important because some plants bloom at night, and plants need, for lack of a better term, to sleep. They need downtime. There are different processes that happen at different times of day. When they're constantly exposed to artificial light, like street lights, well, sure, they can photosynthesize more, but that's not necessarily a good thing. Constantly photosynthesizing is stressful. Imagine doing nothing but working all the time. No rest, no sleep, just work, work, work. That's what's happening to these plants that are subjected to artificial light at night. This constant intake of energy can be overwhelming for the plant and can eventually kill it. Combine that with climate change-driven warmer winters and longer summers, and the result is trees and other plants growing outside of their natural rhythm, ultimately weakening them and shortening their lifespans. For example, blooming or bud bursts, when the trees start to show buds, typically happens in the spring with the arrival of warmer temperatures and more hours of sunlight. But light pollution can scramble those cues for the plant. A study from the UK analyzed 13 years of bud burst data and found that bud burst happened up to 7.5 days earlier in areas with high degrees of light pollution. And this may partially explain why in Denver, which is about 120 miles south of here or so, bud burst was happening on Easter weekend, while here in Cheyenne, it's just starting now. Likewise, in the autumn, as daylight grows shorter, deciduous trees normally stop chlorophyll production and drop their leaves. But light pollution causes them to hold their leaves longer, which can cause a couple of problems. First, by making them use more energy than normal by continuing to photosynthesize after they normally would have stopped. And second, because if a heavy snow comes while the leaves are still on the tree, the weight can easily break or damage branches. Other impacts of artificial light that have been noted included stunted growth, reduced fruit production, and an increase in mutation. But light pollution doesn't just directly affect plants, it can also indirectly affect them by affecting the pollinators that they rely on and that rely on them. Kind of a double whammy. Think about moths flying around streetlights or your porch light. Why do they do that? Well, because moths tend to navigate by the light of the moon. The moon, of course, is very far away. So if you fly in a straight line and keep the moon off to one side, it basically seems to stay in one place. But if the moth confuses your porch light, which is, of course, much closer for the moon, it finds itself flying around and around that light in a futile attempt to go in a straight line. In a 2014 study to see how streetlights affected the behavior of moths, biologists found that over 70% were drawn upward toward the streetlights and away from the flowering plants. And the result was a noticeable reduction in both plant pollination and the number of pollen types transported by the moths. And the results were consistent across several different moth species and over 28 different species of plant, which means the ripple effect could have far-reaching consequences. Disruption in how nocturnal pollinators interact with certain plants can impact pollen production and in turn impact daytime pollinators like bees too. Not to mention the fact that streetlights may deter nocturnal moths from laying eggs and make them easier for predators to spot. And, as if that's not enough, caterpillars born under streetlights may alter their feeding habits. Surveys have shown that there are about half as many caterpillars in artificially lit areas compared to unlit areas. So what about insects that aren't pollinators? Well, it's easy to see how light pollution could impact those summertime favorites, fireflies. I mean, it's going to be harder for the ladies to see your light-up butt if they're blinded by a bunch of bright streetlights, right? And way back in episode 5, I talked about the American burying beetle, a nocturnal species of carrion beetle whose decline was noted as early as the 1920s. While many factors probably contributed to this beetle's decline, including pesticide use and habitat loss, some research has suggested that light pollution may have also played a part. And we're talking about the early 20th century here, not exactly the streetlight heyday. But burying beetles are strictly nocturnal, and they prefer places that are exceptionally dark. Mayflies, which are famous for their short lifespans after emerging as adults, can also be impacted by light pollution. Adult female mayflies lay their eggs in water, which they find by detecting the polarization of reflected light. They're easily fooled by other polished surfaces and even asphalt reflecting artificial light. And these can act as traps for swarming mayflies, and if they lay their eggs in the target parking lot, well, clearly that's not going to go well. Field crickets, another nocturnal species, are also impacted by light pollution, as are any insects that feed at night and avoid light. But okay, again, why should we care? Lots of people don't like bugs and would probably be happy to see fewer of them. You may not like crickets, but how sad would it be to not hear their songs on summer nights? But beyond that, we come back to the ripple effect. Insects are an important food source for many other species, so a reduction in that food source can have serious consequences farther up the food web. Likewise, light pollution can tip the balance in favor of predators if it traps insects around lights, or it can tip the balance of a specific species of predator. For example, some species of spiders avoid lit areas, while others will happily build their webs directly on lampposts. Since lights attract flying insects, spiders that tolerate the light gain an advantage over spiders that avoid it. And the same is true for other animals. In addition to spiders, bats, rats, shorebirds, geckos, and cane toads have all been found feeding around artificial lights. This increase in predation could easily lead to the rapid extinction of an affected species. A review of 229 published studies found that a third of bugs that are attracted to artificial light at night don't survive past the morning, either because of predation, exhaustion, or hunger. In one article I read for this episode, the authors pointed out that light pollution is particularly hard for insects to deal with. Their assertion was that most human-caused threats to insects have natural analogs, like climate change or invasive species, which means that these insects have some chance to adapt. But the daily cycle of light and dark has remained constant for almost all of evolutionary time, making it a much more difficult problem to adapt to. Okay, so who else is impacted by light pollution? Would you believe that light pollution can actually impact water quality? Some studies have suggested that light pollution around lakes prevents certain species of zooplankton from eating surface algae, leading to algal blooms that can kill off the lake's plants and, yep, lower water quality. Bet you didn't see that coming when this episode started, did you? I know I didn't. Some species of frogs and salamanders use moonlight to orient their migration to breeding sites. Artificial light can obviously interfere with that navigation. And you probably already know that light pollution can be a problem for sea turtle hatchlings. Sea turtles lay their eggs on sandy beaches, and the hatchlings, when they emerge, make their way to the ocean. Now, it's a common misconception that sea turtle hatchlings are attracted to the moon, and they confuse artificial lights for the moon, kind of like moths do. But they actually find the ocean by moving away from the dark silhouette of the sand dunes and their vegetation. Street lights or other lights from beachside businesses can disorient the hatchlings, causing them to go the wrong way. Fortunately, many communities where sea turtles nest have become sensitive to this problem and will turn off lights, erect barriers to block the lights, or have volunteers monitor the nests and help orient the hatchlings in the right direction if needed. But aside from insects and sea turtle hatchlings, migrating birds are probably the most impacted by light pollution. Many birds migrate at night, using the stars to navigate in ways that are still not fully understood. But if lights from big cities can make the stars difficult or impossible to see, well, now those birds have a problem. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimates that at least 4 to 5 million birds per year are killed by collisions with lit-up towers or buildings. And that's the conservative estimate. That number may be much, much higher. Similar disorientation has also been noted for bird species migrating close to offshore oil production and drilling facilities. And humans aren't immune to the effects of light pollution either. In any animal, humans included, artificial light can interfere with the production of melatonin, the neurotransmitter that regulates your sleep-wake cycles. Medical research on the effects of excessive light on the human body suggests that there are a variety of adverse health effects which can be caused by light pollution or excessive exposure to artificial light. Some of these effects include headaches, fatigue, increased stress, decrease in sexual function, decreased mood, and an increase in anxiety. Preliminary studies have linked artificial outdoor light at night to risks for obesity, mental disorders, diabetes, and potentially other health issues. And remember, we're talking about lights here. If this was something in our food or our water, we'd be outraged and campaigning for change. Now, fortunately, there's plenty of things we can do, and most of them are actually pretty easy. First of all, turn off the lights. Okay, yeah, I know we can't just turn off all the lights, but as individuals, we can turn off outside lights at home when we don't need them, or put them on a motion detector so they only turn on when they're needed. Your house isn't a Motel 6. You don't need to leave the light on. Street lights and other outdoor lighting can be designed to be shielded so that the light is directed down to where it's needed and prevented from shining upwards. There's a group called the Fatal Light Awareness Program that works with building owners in Toronto, Canada, and other cities to reduce mortality of birds by turning out lights during migration periods. And the Post Tower, which is in Germany, found that decreasing excessive light decreased bird mortality. A study of lighting designs on offshore oil platforms found that a change in the lighting design of one oil drilling platform reduced the number of birds circling it by 50 to 90%. Now, if you want to find the best place to see the Milky Way and count the stars in the Pleiades cluster, the group Dark Sky International can help. They've certified over 200 dark sky places consisting of 160,000 square kilometers of protected land and night sky in 22 countries and 6 continents. In addition to certifying and helping conserve what they call starry sky parks, they also do education on light pollution, certify outdoor lighting products, and work with communities, governments, and professionals to advocate for quality outdoor lighting. You can check them out at darksky.org. And with that, we'll turn off the lights on this episode. Thanks again for listening. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get not just the Dispatches from the Forest podcast, but now my new short-form podcast, Dirt Dispatches. By listening, you've given me moral support. If you're inclined to provide some financial support, you can do that in several ways. First, become a patron. My Patreon page is patreon.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. Subscriptions start at just $5 a month. $5. That's like 16 cents a day. What a deal. Second, you can buy some Dispatches from the Forest merchandise. The merch store can be found at cafepress.com/dispatchesfromtheforest. Finally, you can donate via PayPal at dispatchesfromtheforest@gmail.com, which is also the email address where you can send me any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes. I'm your host, Tim the Nature Nerd O'Hara, reminding you to go outside and get dirty. And hey, last one to come inside, please turn off the lights. Dispatches from the Forest podcast is a production of Dispatches from the Forest and may not be used or rebroadcast whole or in part without express written permission.